All right, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today my guest is Luke Rowell. He's a New Zealand-based computer music composer who makes music under the monikers Eyeliner and Disaster Radio. His stuff is kind of adjacent to the whole online vaporwave music scene, and we do talk a little bit about that in our chat. He has a new album out as Eyeliner. It's called BRB, which may or may not have been influenced or inspired by a Steely Dan song. You'll have to listen to our conversation to find that out. You know, I've been a fan of Eyeliner for years now, well before I was doing any kind of online Steely Dan thing, but I came across Luke on Twitter. You know, I saw that he also participates in putting up funny Steely Dan bits and memes and, you know, pieces of trivia. So it made perfect sense for him to join me on the pod to talk about his own work, which I was already very familiar with, but also talk all about Steely Dan. So it was my pleasure to connect with him all the way from New Zealand. Folks, as we near the very end of the year, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who listened to the podcast this year. To those of you who have accompanied me on my Steely Dan journey, it's been a real honor. And thanks also, of course, to all the great guests. Obviously, there wouldn't be a show without them. Looking ahead to next year, yes, there will be more Gaucho Amigos, but I got to take a short break, so we'll be off for about a month. And I encourage you all to spend that time catching up on some of the episodes you may have missed. Finally, I just wanted to wish everyone a slightly belated Merry Christmas and, of course, a Happy New Year. Without further ado, this is my conversation with Luke Rowell, a.k.a. Eyeliner. Enjoy.
First think piece about vaporwave came out, naming it Vaporwave by Adam Harper on Dummy Magazine. He lumped in it was James Ferraro, Macintosh Plus, Computer Dreams, probably Midnight Television, a lot of the sample based stuff along with James Ferraro and Fatima Al-Qadiri. I don't know if you know her work, but she's very very cool sort of MIDI synth. Yeah. And along the same lines of James Ferraro, but her EP genre specific experience. What I gravitated towards there was the composed stuff for sure, rather than necessarily the sampled stuff. Cause like I'd play a record and it would be like 8 Italo disco songs that I knew already. And I'd be like, okay, like for those that like it, you know, all power to them, but I've ruined myself to be able to enjoy this, you know, right. In that respect. Yeah, no, I definitely, I don't know how far back you want to go with the origins, but long story short, because I was in a kind of internet creative group that was advocating for copyright law reform, I couldn't be seen to be caught sampling anything. So I was in the sort of this advocacy position for digital artists against like some weird copyright law reform in the mid 2000s. But yeah, I couldn't then release stuff with samples on it because, you know, we might have been being watched by, you know, greater media interest in the States and stuff. Because, yeah, that's a long story, but like I basically couldn't be releasing anything with samples. So my idea was with Eyeliner initially was to create that kind of world from scratch, sounding like it may have been sampled, but along that same like James Ferraro, Far Side Virtual, like... world building thing, you know, you can go a lot further, you know, that's where you would also be getting into Steely Dan with the world building and the mythos. Yeah. And I'm attracted to groups or artists that understand their sound or their aura and they kind of carry that through, you right. know, there is a kind of thread that they know themselves enough to make their own records over and over again.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes there's like a patchy output, but if you look at, you know, from Come By a Thrill up to at least up to Gaucho, like that, those, you can't sort of tell which is the older or the newer record necessarily.
That's true. Yeah. As we get further and further away from that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably true for your stuff too. I mean, I started with I think I discovered LARP of Luxury was the first one. And it was right at the same time that I was like starting my first job as an adult. And I feel like I would like listen to it on the subway. And I was like, I'm like a Sim. Like I'm living in the big city and I'm listening to like my little Sim music, you know, like, I feel like it was perfect for that. Cause all the tracks were like, about products or something, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they're all named after brand names, and except for the exception of New Zealand, but also, the idea with calling a track New Zealand was that the prime minister was also the minister for tourism, and tourism here is, you know, a little maligned with some of the, you know, cultural practices, environmental practices, yada yada yada. So I'm like, oh, okay, New Zealand itself is a brand name, you know, like at the end. But that's interesting that you had the same experience. I was trying to, like, when I was working on that record, like cultivate this same sort of pedestrian idea by, I would listen to the demos at the supermarket. So it's kind of my like supermarket record. Like I'd wake up and get a Danish and a coffee from the supermarket every morning and be listening to the demos. So it's kind of the idea is like placing a record in a space and testing it, you know, being your own sort of test subject.
What I loved about it is as a child of the suburbs in the 80s and 90s, it kind of evoked that, you know, like it reminded me of music you would hear like at the, you know, grocery store or, you know, interstitial music, you know, between programs on television or, you know, the VHS, that kind of washed out sound. I mean, not as much your music as maybe other similar music in the genre, but it's evoking that feeling right through the sound.
Yeah.
Is that part of your thing?
Yeah. And on that record, and even back further, I've come from the sort of more chiptune, vintage computer music, MIDI side of things. So that record is quite crisp because it is sort of acknowledging that legacy of kind of crisp digital stuff. But I know what you're saying, like melody wise and harmony wise, I was trying to get into that sort of production music, interstitial music. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's weird because we don't have, there's a lot of terms of reference that we didn't have in New Zealand that people pick up on. Like my record by now, everyone says it sounds like something called Kid Picks, and I've never used this thing called Kid Picks as some like children's painting software or something, or like,
oh wow.
I'm kind of in a way imagining what the in-store music sounds like at department stores, because we didn't have in-store music in department stores. It would always just be like smooth rock radio or whatever. Like, so there is this kind of idea that I am sort of attempting to be projected back from, specifically like American culture. You know, I'm a bit of like an American weeb. Like I do love, like, you know, postmodern American culture comedy, you know, all of that, obviously, you know, and Steely Dan are a huge, huge part of that. But like, Burroughs, Kerouac, I read all that sort of stuff as a teen, you know, like, I think especially in New Zealand, we're quite like culturally, we look out and we're always trying to sort of collect back, like record collecting and record sharing and cassette sharing in high school was huge. We were just like so thirsty for something from somewhere else that, you know, we kind of, like a lot of my friends are like hardcore record collectors, and, you know, we'd listen to like, you know, the Boredoms and like Fudge Tunnel and like, you know, it's random stuff, or like Ian MacKaye and Al Jorgensen's album Palehead that he, the guy from Minor Threat did with the guy from Ministry. It's like I've got a third generation dub cassette of that, that, you know, at least all these, you know, like kind of sharing and passing around stuff in high school was very strong. But it took me a long time to even get to the States, and then you get to the States and it's way more American than you even imagine, you know, like it's like crawling inside your TV.
I mean, there's a strong satirical element to all this stuff too, like your music or James Ferraro's. Like it's, in a weird way, because it's not celebrating, you know, like the capital spirit, or it's not celebrating these products by naming them. Like,
there's a few ways you can sort of cut that cake. Like, it is camp along the lines of not like queer camp, but camp as in the lie that tells the truth. You know, you sort of say one thing to say another, and the music isn't serious, but it is sort of sincere, and it's emotionally sincere but sort of thematically sort of contextually unserious. And I mean, that's where you can come back to Steely Dan, is that they have a foot in both camps, no matter where you go. You know, they're earnest and sarcastic. They're kind of high art and low art. They are lowbrow, you know, lyrically sort of lowbrow scenarios represented in a kind of highbrow delivery. You know, they're kind of novel and conventional. And that's the music that I've always been into has done this kind of middle way between two things, you know, like even as a kid, like getting to like Devo or, you know, Pere Ubu, all these kind of like weird art rock bands and stuff. It's like that anything that does more than one job at a time just tends to sort of get my brain going. And that's what I try to do with Eyeliner. Like at least initially the first Eyeliner record, I'd spent so long making these Disaster Radio records, which is my other project. I would spend sort of 2 or 3 years of afternoons, weekends, like all the time I had making these records on my own. And then the first Eyeliner record, I noticed I had all these working files and just got them together in like 2 weeks. I was like, I'm gonna make a record in 2 weeks, that's gonna be it, that'll be done. And then since putting out that record, now I'm spending 2 or 3 years on an Eyeliner record now, because I've got this kind of language, you know. It's like I failed the initial mission, but like it just does take that long to make a record, you know.
Yeah.
But wow. Yeah. Now the records have become super intricate, and I'm like, you know, trying to put in little bits of feel and you know, little mistakes and little grooves and stuff into the MIDI, like as I'm, because it's all MIDI. There's no audio recording at all. Yeah. So I'll record MIDI and then quantize it all up and then reprogram it for the feel. So just shifting things like half, you know, a 32nd or, you know, half a 32nd note, or these kind of things. It's like I understand why Donald and Walter want to be in the studio, having like, you know, a todo, as we say, just like seeing every possibility, you're looking at everything from every angle, you know, getting it right. Like, you know, I do empathize with that, because it's a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah.
Pour out the wine, little girl. We got just two friends in this whole wide world. Ciao, buongiorno, baby. It's been a lovely night. The wine was right. I am a refugee, and I like things just the way they used to be. I'm the same.
What got me right into Steely Dan, my wife's Toyota Corolla got wrecked in an accident. So she got we got the insurance payout and bought an old Prius, and the Prius had a really good CD player. So I was like, okay, I need some Steely Dan. I need to listen to Steely Dan on FLAC for this Prius era. So I got the, there's a 2-disc best of, it's a British one. Does it start with Do It Again?
Is it the one with like a woman like sipping a drink on the cover?
I think so. So I had that on CD, and I was just listening to this best of. And then I listened to that, the first disc of that best of, for like a year and a half. Then finally, this is like 2016, 17.
Yeah.
Then Asia was the big one for me. That was like the one that cemented my love for the band in a big way. And then I listened to Asia for like a year and a half, and moved to Hong Kong and listened to Royal Scam for a year and a half. Then at the start of last year, came back to New Zealand, and I've recently closed up a kind of gaucho era. So now I'm in between kind of listening to a lot of Pretzel Logic and Katie Lied, Countdown Ecstasy, as well as the kind of rabbit hole in the rabbit hole, Lost Gaucho, Nightfly, Two Against Nature, that kind of thing. So I thought I was going deep by going, you know, back towards Can't Buy a Thrill. But finding like, I don't know what counts as Lost Gaucho, but like Donald Fagen's solo piano and vocal, like performances of those songs are incredible.
They're so good.
You know, like
they're so good.
So good. Yeah, so I listen to that stuff at work, and I'm like, man, I feel like I've just got dinner and a show, you know, with Donald just up there.
I wish we could get a release of the. There's only a few, like the Black Cow one is amazing, and I actually through doing this podcast, I interviewed one of the Asia engineers, and he basically said Donald made demos for all the songs on Asia.
Oh,
so
wow.
I know, but the only one that's come out is the Black Cow one, but there are others out there in the ether. Hopefully someday someone will put them up, or, you know, let them free.
Yeah, that'd be incredible. Just Donald Asia. Yeah. So like, yeah, so it's linked in with a lot of driving, you know. Driving to Asia was really good. You know, driving to Deacon Blues is incredible. you know, not taking any inspiration from the song whatsoever, but
yeah, I as think long as you don't fully role play the song, you know?
Yeah.
Keep a little distance. Deacon Blues
speed run. So yeah, I was, it was funny. Like, yeah, Asia, I remember I was gigging a lot and then like listened to Asia driving home, you know, with my Prius full of synthesizers, and Royal Scam, I remember just like listening to every morning, because we kind of had to flee Hong Kong. My wife was nannying for a family who were from the US, and she basically had to flee with their family because COVID stuff was getting kind of crazy.
Oh wow.
So I was in this kind of like packing up the apartment and mailing my stuff home, listening to Royal Scam on loop. It was kind of good, like this kind of Kid Charlemagne, like, you know, getting the hell out of somewhere. It was kind of like fun, but that's how I listen to records. It's like I'll just like go over and over a record for months and months and months. Yeah. I did it with the Thin Lizzy back catalog, and that took like 3 years to get from, you know, all the way up to Thunder and Lightning. But
yeah, I'm the same way. I'll get really obsessed with like one album in a discography. I won't run through it. Like and then sometimes I'll get really into like one of the albums that isn't the big one for so long. Mm. And then when I finally get to the big one, it just doesn't hit the same way. It's just like, I don't know.
Yep.
It's
weird. Yep. I did this with Meat Puppets. I listened to the album Huevos, which they recorded in like 2 days. It's like a ZZ Top inspired, like, and everyone's like, oh, you need to listen to this, this, and that. And I'm like, oh no, Huevos is the one. It's really good. But yeah, that good to know I'm not crazy then. Just like, yeah, just cycling through a record is like, there's something so pleasurable about it when it's something you can put on once a day, you know, just keep going.
Because then you get to know all the little intricate, like, you know, mishap, like, kind of like you were saying with your music, like all those little like small imperfections and or mishaps that kind of make their way through it all. Like you actually know, you start to memorize when those are actually going to show up or how they affect the music itself and how they make it into kind of the personality of the song. But
And if you're looking for like spotting intricacies, like Steely Dan's, pretty good for that.
yeah, they're built in that case. But
yeah. I always felt like Third World Man sounds more like a Royal Scam song, because Royal Scam deals with a lot of maligned people in trouble, you know, and maybe Second Arrangement has a lot more showbiz in it. And if for me, I think if you swap out Third World Man for Second Arrangement, you have this whole album, Gaucho, that's completely kind of showbiz, you know. It's completely like, Gaucho's about guys being jerks and sort of not caring, you know. Right. But yeah, I know I shouldn't rearrange the canon, but you know, there are things to sort of consider, you know.
Yeah, well, I do feel like with each Steely Dan album, they were going for a kind of specific concept within the overall shape of the record. So it is interesting to think about these things, like which songs fit into which concepts, like more clearly. And the fact that Were You Blind That Day was actually recorded as part of the Asia sessions, it's just, you know, once you know that information, it's like, wait a minute, so this was actually not necessarily intended for Gaucho. But that actually happened throughout their career, where they would kind of recycle material. So like quite a few of the songs on Pretzel Logic and Katie Lied, they actually wrote before Can't Buy a Thrill. Like, it's from their very early days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is, man, the kind of shit that I'm getting into.
Yeah, cool. No, this is good. This is good. Yeah. This is like knowledge that we need to store for like post-apocalypse, because like should be only be gathered once. But that's amazing though, writing that stuff so young too. Like, I struggle with lyrics myself, like, you know, that you know, they write songs and they have to come up with the guy to sing about, you know, like it's not enough to like write the song, is like the whole fiction around the piece is like a whole other thing, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't Donald writing from his own heart or experiences. He was literally coming up with characters. I mean, like, he was like writing a little novel, right? He was writing these characters and stories.
Yeah, it's like, here's a guy. Like, it's I've only just gotten into Two Against Nature, but it seems like that whole album, it's very fast and full of scumbags, that one. Like, it's like... I think maybe Cousin Dupree's a little ickier than even Everyone's Gone to the Movies. It's just like, it's brilliant. But like, I don't know, I couldn't come up with that shit. Like, that's,
no, that's, it's incredible. It's so dark.
Yeah.
Janie Runaway and Gaslighting Abby. And Cousin Dupree. Yeah, like, they're all just like some of the worst human beings that you'll ever conceive of.
Yeah.
It's funny that after 20 years, when they decided to make their comeback, they just were like, doubling down on like coming up with guys that were just totally gross and like, but that's what they do so well. So they just,
that's what we're in for. You know? Which is why we need a TV show where Donald Fagen and Walter Becker are private eyes, and they catch the bad guys and they help the drug dealers, and Wendell is a talking computer who solves the crimes for them. It'll be incredible.
That's so good.
I have this, because you were saying, even like the albums are like movies, you know, like you can imagine the whole thing being like a whole world, you know, like the Fargo series or Castle Rock or the Stephen King. Like, I feel like that's crying out to be made, but then maybe it is this thing where Steely Dan fans have this you know, over importance of all of this stuff, you know, maybe to an outside observer watching this TV show, they'd be like, you know, Jive Miguel, what kind of name is that, you know, like but in my head I'm just like, yeah, they're these kind of slacker private eyes who like occasionally have little jams, you know, and they're like, you know, figuring it out, you know, and like, you know, they're catching the scumbags, you know, like, but they're kind of anti-cops too, you know, like, yeah.
They have the right look for it too, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, both in their glasses, you know, they're kind of like, I don't know what era that, those photographs are, but like, I can just see it, you know.
Yeah.
And Wendell, I want their drum sampler thing, I want it to have a voice like Kit from Knight Rider, to be like, you know, doing the maths on this kind of, you know,
in the 80s and 90s, like all those shows had like some robot or computer character who would like provide
exactly,
like
it's
comic, it's relief, and usually it would come through a little, that's where your chiptune comes in, right? It's like, it would
exactly
be like
exactly
some sort of 8-bit, you know, voice on it or something.
Did Wendell ever make it on a record, or was he? Replaced. Yeah. So is the kick drum in like Glamour Profession a sampler?
It's on Gaucho. Like, yeah. No, it's throughout the album. I don't know exactly which, because I actually haven't sat down and been like, okay, where is Wendell? What is?
Yeah.
I believe Roger Nichols built a second computer. Because
Wendell too,
Wendell too, or Wendell Jr. or something,
and
that's on there. So I think like IGY has some Wendell on it, but yeah, so Wendell is definitely. I think they actually gave a platinum record to Wendell. Like, it's
fair enough. Yeah,
the like Recording Academy or whatever. Just, I think he was the first computer win a. Yeah,
it's so good. Like, yeah, out of any band to have this kind of well-regarded computer as a member, it's so funny. On Nightfly, I'm loving this week the Goodbye Look. I think it's an incredible song, and the little polyphonic, maybe it's like a little DX7, the little plinky plinky thing. I'm like, as soon as that came on, like when I was listening to Nightfly for the first time, I was like, oh, this is me, this kind of like really cheesy little plinky like marimba thing. I love it. Yeah, well, one thing that cemented in my love for Steely Dan was that Grace Spellman's People Dancing to Steely Dan Twitter account. That was incredible. no, she's not doing that anymore, but seeing the response to that. But yeah, there's something very specific I like about trying to go for and sharing Steely Dan memes is that, like, I think the good Steely Dan memes tend to revolve around a very sort of specific, like, cult level of knowledge. that the kind of, as I wrote the note for you before the interview, like, the assumption that the Steely Dan mythos is kind of like as popular as like The Simpsons is something like really funny to me. Like, you can say, oh, there's that episode about the monorail, without mentioning The Simpsons, and people will know what you're talking about.
Right.
But like, in the same way you want to say, like, oh, local boys will spend a quarter just to shine the silver bowl in this economy, you know, this kind of thing. I love that there's just something, it's hard to put into words, but like, yeah, you kind of treat Steely Dan as something that everybody knows about and that everyone will enjoy. And like, coming from this baseline, you're making up, you know, you see a lot of memes based around that sort of approach. That's what I love about it. Does that make sense?
I always, in terms of what I post and how I do it, like, one thing I think of, I mean, I don't think too deeply about it. I kind of just go with instinct most of the time. But I think one thing that I try to cultivate is like letting the person who's coming to it make the connection for themselves. Like, don't explain what it is. Yeah. And I think by doing that, I think what happened was, I think a lot of like these Steely Dan people have taken on the same sort of ethos. But like, I think what happened was, you know, that sort of insider aspect of it, I think people, it added to the sort of curiosity or the mystique. And then people were like, okay, what is this local boys? Like, they saw the lyric.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is weird. Yeah. This is funny. Like, I understand that this is funny, but I want to know what it means too. And then they went back and actually listened to Asia, listened to Gaucho, listened to these weird albums. Yeah. And that's, I think, helped. Like, and I think also just the way that they wrote, you know, something about their style of writing, you know, it's so like
quotable.
It's so quotable. It's like these references that they would drop in, these names, you know, Hoops McCann, Jive Miguel, like all these weird characters and places and things. They weren't like things that you would see anywhere else. They were specific to the, you know, the Steely Dan world. And I think people just were like, okay, I got to investigate, you know, what this is about. So even though it wasn't a Simpsons level popular thing, something about the way the internet operates, I think people like had to go and find out, you know,
for themselves. Yeah, absolutely. It's like you kind of package up this obscure knowledge in order to promote the band. Like, it's, there's something very like, there's something very funny about it, and you can't do that with much else in the kind of meme space. There's just there is a kind of richness in their scenarios that, you know, you can find something that will apply.
I mean, I think The Simpsons did that too in their own way. Like, and if you're watching The Simpsons, like I think it appealed to a certain type of person or a certain type of humor, because they would drop these references.
Yes.
It was perfect for the television age, because you would just see it and then you kind of had to like do the digging yourself, right? Like all the like movie references that are in there. But Steely Dan's better for the internet or somehow. I don't know.
Yeah. It's reaching out for the person where they've got a little bit in their brain that goes, ding, I understand. Like, you know, the Pavlovian bell goes off and you're like, oh yeah, this is that, you know, that thing in Asia or and inexhaustible, you know? I'm trying to work on like citizen box set speedrun memes, like the idea that you can, you know, you take video game speedrunning, but like, I've been working on this tweet for like months to be like, if you double jump during Sign and Stranger on She Takes a Taxi to a Good Hotel, you can come out at the I Love You More Than I Can Tell in My Rival. This kind of idea that you can like, because they've seen Family Guy speedrun and American Family speedrun, but the idea that you can sort of speedrun the the box set, you know, and there's an earlier box set. The first edition of the box set doesn't have the marimba intro to Ricky. Don't lose that number. So you can shave off like 10 seconds there. Like this kind of, I don't know what it is, but yeah, you know, we know what it is. Like this kind of,
yeah, it's almost a gamer mindset. Yeah. Like there's cheats and codes and shortcuts. It's like how you can take the little tunnels in Mario.
Yeah.
It's like you can take like the warp. Tunnel.
Yeah.
The warps, the world warps. Yeah, you can warp from CD1 to CD3 if you,
Like I don't know. That's that kind of thing.
Yeah. The synth breakdown of King of the World on disc one, you know, you can, you can warp on that to all the way to Gaucho. You time it right. Yeah, you've participated a little bit in the in some of the meme stuff, right? Like because I was just looking through any to see if you had any other Steely Dan posts. Like I think I typed in like Disaster Radio Steely Dan, and I found that that great karaoke thing that you posted.
Karaoke file, yeah. So there are a few Steely Dan karaoke files that are incredible. I was even thinking of booking a gig as Disaster Radio, but it's just me doing Steely Dan on karaoke. It would be really good. But I can link you to these karaoke files, but they are lovingly produced, you know, like even the sax solo on that version of Deacon Blues is like almost perfect. You know, there's some kind of like embouchure that's not quite hitting right, but like, yeah, when I found the karaoke files with the graphics built into them, there's these kind of like cityscapes and stuff and like, you know, 8-bit color, it's just like, oh yeah, that's the stuff, you know,
that's right in your wheelhouse in terms of like your aesthetic, right? It's like that kind of stuff. Yeah it's great. I love that stuff too.
I don't know how, I mean, I do try to post as many little Steely Dan things as I can on my Twitter, but I've almost gone, hey, if you don't get the gag, it's probably a Steely Dan thing. Like, you know, just make that admission, you know, on the Twitter timeline. But I like the idea that people are confused by this very specific thing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I was stuck in an apartment in Hong Kong for like 2 years and like listening to a lot of Steely Dan and just like tweeting a lot of stuff like that I probably forgot. But yeah, I need to scroll back through the timeline and see what I've actually said, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. The posting is the cherry on top, though. So yeah, that sample is off. I don't know if you know Zero G data file. The data file sample CDs are very incredible, like sketchily copyright zone. But yeah, that vocal sample, if you do want to dive into like the lore of a sample CD, Zero G data file is worth having a look at. That's that baby sample in the on the lead there, but so that second track BRB is kind of, I was listening to IGY a lot, so I was like, okay, BRB, IGY, this kind of thing. I specifically like listen to a lot of Steely Dan, like in the end of I got an album called Drop Shadow where there's like there's a song called Reverie, which I was I'd watched a lot of the Donald Fagen the keyboard VHS thing that he put out where he's like thoroughly uninterested in what he's talking about, but like I was like, okay, so these are how these chords are structured. Like I did do a bit of kind of self-taught jazz harmony stuff, and that did, you know, manifest specifically in Reverie. I came up with like a chord progression that's quite has that same sort of, he can pull off these like really hypnotic kind of MC Escher sort of chord systems,
like the peg chord system he was talking about in that, right? It's like a tutorial, right? And he basically explains how did he come up with the chord progression on peg. And it's totally,
he's just
crazy,
waving his hands around, and it's just like, what the heck? Yeah. So I'm like, I want a bit of that, you know? So Yeah, very specifically like that period of listening to Asia a lot. And I've got a couple of demos that I'm working on that I listened back this week, and I'm like, they're very Donald Fagen, to the point where, like, you know, you maybe should you know, massage a bit of those sevens out or whatever. But yeah, it's been like very beneficial to think about his practice harmonically with his piano playing and sequencing, you know, like trying to take on that influence. Because when I started writing music, I was writing in trackers, like really basic kind of chiptune stuff, and like music theory. I dropped out of music school like two times in college, and just that whole other side of it is like, it does, you know, you listen to enough Steely Dan, you'll end up playing those kind of chord progressions. Like, kind of beautiful about it, you know, that there's, you know, so much in there to draw from. But so I was trying to bring in those horn sections and stuff on that new track BRB, in a kind of you know, Asia era kind of horn thing. So
that's great,
you end up being stuck, you know, you're mixing it for 4 hours on your own, and you're like, yeah, I'm Steely Dan now, you know. Got all these, you know, plugins and stuff, like, I know, I don't need Bernard Purdy, I've got this drum machine, you know, like. But, you know, just role playing that kind of idea, you know, like you know, setting up this kind of scenario in your head to get through the song, you know, it's kind of fun.
The introduction starts with a very similar chords. You have a major chord, and then, although you don't have the exact one, you have something similar. And those two chords are the basic two chords that give the introductionist character. It's just three sequences going down in whole tones like this. Same chords, whole tone down. Which ends on the fifth, leading back to G, but instead of going directly to G, we'll go through the plagal cadence.
Uh-huh. And that's where you set up your groove, right?
That
there,
sets
right?
up the groove. We have a drum fill and right into the
first verse.
Into the verse, exactly. Yeah.
I'm using the same plugin for every track, apart from the drums. So High Fashion Mood Music was all called Wave Station, which is like a vintage digital synth that they've recreated as a plugin.
Okay.
So it is attempting to, I've enforced a limitation by saying I'm only using this one synth for everything.
Got it. Interesting.
And it's, the synth has, you know, it has presets for strings, bells, slap bass, weird little motion sequences, you know, gamelan, saxophone, whatever. They've got, it's the early, well, what we would call the early digital workstation era keyboards. So suddenly everything fits together with itself.
I see. So that kind of creates a musical consistency, and also maybe allows
it
you
all comes
to
into
not...
one pocket. Yeah.
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 Interesting.
Yeah. So if I come out of that, then if I make an exception to that, it's got to be very considered. Like, High Fashion Mood Music is all Wave Station, Lapa Luxury, a little bit of DX7 emulation, Wave Station, and little bit of Korg M1, and then By Now is all Korg M1, and every track has slap bass, the same slap bass patch on every song, and then Drop Shadow is more of the same Korg M1, and then the new one BRB is Korg M1 plus some Kawai emulation stuff. So I work with plugins because I can open up sessions from 2008 that I was working on as like a 25-year-old and fix my past mistakes, make new tunes out of the stuff. And it's like, I can always refer back to the things, my ideas that I had back then, but you know, I'll open something up from 2009 and go like, oh, this is what I was meaning, you know, it's some sort of inversion or whatever, fix it. And then I'll have, you know, I've got this whole storehouse of everything I've ever worked on, sort of sitting there to be made sense of at a later date. And I don't have to plug in a keyboard or like patch some stuff together. It just all happens inside the computer. So
yeah. Interesting.
It's a kind of, it's cheap and it's easy. You can move house easily and you don't need much room.
Yeah.
And you everything's virtualized, so you can always go back to those old ideas. But yeah, having said all that, it needs to be, for the purposes of what eyeliner does, needs to be limited to a certain type of palette. Otherwise it would become something a bit different. And you hear that with James Ferraro's Farside Virtual. That's all GarageBand, I think. So
yeah,
you can, once you start hearing that, you hear it. But it's picking the limitations first, and then I mean, I've made four records out of one plugin, which is pretty silly, but
no,
I'm getting pretty good at programming it by now.
But yeah.
So this idea that it's kind of a LARP in terms of, like, an old library musician or even a new age musician might have like a primitive MIDI sequencer and one workstation keyboard with like a multi-timbral setup, so they can play 16 tracks of various different synth patches, wavetable patches. And it's thinking that, like, okay, I'm this obscure new age composer. I'm going to, I own a DX7 FM synth and a Korg wavestation and a drum machine, and these are the three pieces of gear that I own. So these are going to be virtualized in a plugin, and I'm going to do a record out of these three pieces of gear. So it's kind of attempting to get the whole digital realm and just like fold it down into like one band to be concise.
When you're starting to craft a piece, though, do you have like an aesthetic in your head of, you know, like do you have the song title, and then you put it, I mean, what's your creative process?
The titles are a big, big one. Like, I've got like a list of like 120 different titles, or like, you know, I'll be driving somewhere and I'll see like the name of a car, like, and I'll have to like pull up at the lights and quickly put it into my Trello board, because like the titles, sometimes I have something that's waiting for a title, and then I'll get the title and it will all make a lot more sense. Or sometimes it will come from the title itself. But yeah, that the whole kind of like logogenic part of the music making is incredibly key. Like imagining the track list for the album as I'm working on it, like, you know, how long are the titles? Are most of the titles, you know, two words or one word, or this kind of thing? Like that is huge. But a lot of it's just like loose improv, or like I'll get like an automatic beat from a workstation keyboard, like a sort of preset MIDI thing, and then put that into branch it out, or like use software like Band in a Box to generate like MIDI progressions and stuff. But yeah, it's about sort of bringing all that together. A lot of kind of obscure MIDI software that I've been using lately, like to generate like swing chord progressions, or, you know, these kind of things. But yeah, it's either improv or a title, or, you know, improv then a title. Like, I've got a piece that I was working on that I decided it's called Wet Maps. So I added all these like little water bloops, and now it like makes sense, you know, this kind of...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, getting a kind of concept in there is kind of key. Yeah.
How about the visual component? Like, where are you drawing from anything specific there? Like, I'm thinking of like your music videos, or your YouTube videos, or I don't know. There's a strong visual sense.
There is.
Like your album art too. Like, where's that drawing from?
Well, the thing with the way I plan out records generally, for eyeliner, is that there is a kind of day night cycle on those records. Like BRB Baby starts in a kind of at the end of a sort of all night party, and then goes into like a weird sort of zone and gets very trippy, and then ends very like a kind of like a daytime kind of zone, and then back to night. Whereas Drop Shadow kind of starts in the morning and goes through to like 2 a.m. This kind of using a kind of sun, moon, color palette as an arc for the record. Plus, yeah, when I'm working on pieces, there will be like a strong visual, like even Lapa Luxury with Nespresso, it opens the album, but then in that there are these like vistas of sunrises, you know, and as the track crests and crests again, there's this kind of like sunrise thing going on. It's very like environmental visuals. And I'll loop a lot of video footage when I'm writing. Like I was playing the track Uptown Virtual with the intro to Hard Boiled, the John Woo movie made in Hong Kong, the action movie. So like I will latch on to like a movie or a video, you know, like a intro sequence or like a montage, if I needed to use it to refer to. But yeah, I've got kind of like a weird photographic memory, so that musically these things are really important to the process, to be able to like visualize how things arc and make sense in my own mind to make it easier to write. Yeah.
Now, will you ever like sit down or listen to some of these like old advertisement music? Like, is that in the rotation of, you know, what you're listening
to? Oh yeah.
To?
Yeah.
You will.
The KPM, production music stuff. There's a really great set of three mixes called Business Funk by a sort of chip tune adjacent artist called Dataset. Okay. They're really cool. Like, and the Kmart tapes that ended up on archive.
Kmart tapes.
The Vaporwave kids went absolutely nuts for certainly like listen to a lot of that stuff. Or like your Mark Shreve, these kind of like semi-library sort of synth guys. And I listened to a lot of the kind of cassette rips on Sounds of the Dawn, those New Age tapes. They're really, really cool. But I've got to be in the mood to listen to New Age, you know, like to be able to sit through a whole 30-minute tape, you know, as you might empathize with. But, you know, it's good to drive to, you know. Definitely like looking for all that sort of stuff and thinking about a lot of, you know, like jingles and, used to listen to a lot of like lounge music and kind of TV themes from the 50s and this kind of stuff. That all feeds into it. I'm definitely like looking for the specific stuff as well as trying to build these grander ideas.
Yeah, Donald Fagen actually, I think he was influenced by the version of that music from his time, which was like he talks about it in if you've ever seen the classic albums Asia documentary, which I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
He calls it like fake jazz. And it's like
fake jazz. Yes. Yeah. When he said that, I did that with that Leonardo DiCaprio Wolf of Wall Street pointing at the TV. I was like, he's like, I like jazz, so I like fake jazz, and I like fake jazz. And I was like, that's it. Sorry. Yeah. So he's listening to that kind of, he must have been in like the kind of voices of Walter Schumann, kind of like 50s light music. He must have been all exposed to that for sure, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, he said like one of his biggest influences, like Henry Mancini, like his TV themes is like literally like a major influence on his work. So
you can hear it in those like those kind of like more like criminal sounding kind of horn progressions, this kind of like spy music thing.
On Josie, cool because, like that that guitar is a little like
it's that dichotomy where like they're simultaneously cheap and expensive, right? Like it's like these kind of points of reference are very cheap, like, you know, TV music or these kind of like schmaltzy, you know, things. And then, you know, produced at such expense, you know.
Exactly.
I keep looking for something in the Dan, you know, delivery that doesn't have like a kind of counterpart that proves its opposite. And I can't find one, you know, like they are sort of rockist and jazzist and, you know, conventional and novel and